Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
First message.
Yes, Mr. Novak. Al Pacino, I was in town here for a couple days, and I thought I'd give you a call. I'm having a problem with my burning bushes. They are prematurely burning. It is only mid-summer, as they say. What the hell's going on here? We having a meltdown or what?
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Angie's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a pierogi's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. And true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find.
If Mike says he's growing a pear, he's literally growing a pear. What did you think he meant? Get your minds out of the irrigation ditch. Here he is, Mike Novak.
One more time.
I think you're supposed to fix the microphone before you actually go on the air. Wow, this thing is just... This thing's hurting today.
It's going to take off, it looks like.
It is. It's a little floppy. Wait. There we go. Let's try that. That's a little better. Okay. I saw Helen laughing over there. You have not heard the growing a pear thing yet?
No, and my inner dialogue is definitely not FCC approved.
Yeah, have I mentioned that before? Don't use your inner dialogue on the radio.
And I do mean dialogue. There are multiple voices going on in there.
In your head, huh? Okay. I do not want to know. And I don't think I have. I don't have your mic up there, Carol. But you can turn that on. You know how to turn on the box there, right? I want to make sure. There we go. And I wonder where Mr. Pacino was calling at the top of the show, because it's not here. There's nothing about this summer that's particularly overheated. Certainly not here in Chicago. In fact, it's my way of thinking, it's been one of the best ever. It's just, I enjoy the cool weather. I like jacket weather. I see no problem with that. You know, you don't always have to be running around in shorts and a T-shirt. I'm perfectly happy. And Mr. DeMaio will be here later on to tell us more about that. But before we get started here, I realized that I had something to do last week, I think, that I failed to do. But that's not surprising, given how distractible I am. Highly distractible, as Garden Design Magazine once said. And you know, it's interesting. They did this review of the show, Garden Design, like in 2011, 2012. I think it might have been 2012. I'm not sure exactly. And then they immediately went out of business. And I thought, okay, that's what you get for messing with me.
Karma.
That's it. You actually, they were being nice. They were saying it's one of the radio shows we're listening to. It's kind of the karma. The bad karma was anything Mike touches turns to lead. Okay. And they went out of business. But then they pulled a Lazarus, and somebody got hold of the magazine and rejuvenated it, and it's still in business. But I think they've probably burned all those copies that I was mentioned in. I just thought I'd mention that. I got an email with the subject line, from a far away listener. Dear Mr. Novak, very formal. We listen to your show by podcast in Glasgow, Scotland. The bad weather seems to form a link between us. One of the reasons we listen to you is that my lovely, all right, and I don't even know how to pronounce this, Bean on Tig, which is means lady of the house. Maybe our Scottish friend, if I've got any Scottish friends out there who can pronounce that for me. I'm sure I'm butchering it. Anyway, the lady of the house is from Chicago. Jennifer is originally from Berwyn, and her mother, who visits us regularly, is from Rolling Meadows. I am an allotmenteer and enjoy any vegetable gardening chat, and you are one of my many accompaniments as I worry my brassicas. Everybody should worry their brassicas, don't you think? Jennifer misses Chicago sometimes, and I know she listens when she feels a little homesick. Say hello to her if you can find the time. She always speaks glowingly about Chicago, although makes very little mention of the Bears. Well, there's not been a whole lot of reason to make mention of the Bears in the last several years. Regards and thanks, Raymond Gallagher, Millerstein, Blantyre, Glasgow. So there you go. Yes?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So I wrote to him and I said, I will mention it. And of course I forgot. But he did write back to me after I wrote to him. He said, because I asked him, you know, what time he'd be listening to the show in Glasgow. He said, of course, it's on the podcast. He said, thanks for the reply. When we listen, we get the podcast. Although we do listen to internet radio, Jennifer has NPR playing a lot while she putters and cooks. But as we are about 9 hours out of sync, the world of the podcast is better for us. If it's all progressive and such, she'll listen. She shouts at the TV a lot, too, especially the Prime Minister. Good luck with the book. Regards, Raymond. So, 9 hours. So it's about 6 p.m. And that's actually a good time to listen to the show. But they do catch it on the podcast, so I appreciate that. So, Raymond and Jennifer, thank you so much. It was, Jennifer from Berwyn originally. Thanks for listening to the show in Glasgow. And, you know, it's weird because when I go to occasionally I look at the stats on podcasts and the website mostly. You see these places like China downloading podcasts, and you go, why are they downloading podcasts in China? But obviously, there's people in China who want to listen to the show. And other places across the country. So very cool. Very, very happy to have you guys listening in Glasgow, Scotland. Today's show, we're going to flip it a little bit, just a little bit. In the green room, again, is in the first part of the show, but it ain't going to be about gardening. The gardening part's going to go in the second hour just because of the schedule and who we have stopping by. So in the green room, I'm going to have Lyman Welch, who's the director for the Alliance for the Great Lakes Water Quality Program. Why is he here? Well, we're going to talk about when green pond scum, what toxic scum, that was it, right, Helen?
Toxic scum.
I decided that's if I start a band, that's going to be the name of it, Toxic Scum. Maybe there's already one out there with the name Toxic Scum, and I'm too late. But remember the toxic scum that hit Lake Erie and 500,000 to 500,000 people around Toledo, Ohio, could not drink fresh water? Well, it's actually very serious. It's not funny. And Lyman Welch, who's with the Alliance for the Great Lakes, is going to talk about what they and a bunch of other groups have in mind to fix that problem. And we will start the show with that. They have actually come up with an action agenda for reducing nutrient pollution and securing safe drinking water for the Lake Erie communities. And, of course, I would assume the rest of the Great Lakes. So that's in the first hour. Rick DeMille weather, 9:45. And then the second hour, I slide over this way where I have the panic button. And because Christy Weber will be here in the studio, and I never know what Christy Weber's going to say, but she's great. And of course, oh, wait, need a bell, because I'm going to say she's a great sponsor of the Mike Novak Show. And her crew put this amazing installation in Millennium Park. It's a permaculture installation. They're growing vegetables, you know, just down the way from the bean and that weird fountain with the faces. Do you like that? I Cloud Gate, which is everybody calls the bean, is pretty cool. I'm still not sure I'm into that fountain with the faces on the bricks. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
What's your opinion of that?
I know what you mean. It's a good place to sit and veg out and chill out and kind of just, mm-hmm. I don't know. You can just like think about things while the faces go by.
while the faces go by.
Yeah, yeah. But no, I don't put that much meaning into it.
It's not even meaning. It's art, you know. Yeah. It's art, functional art, because it's a fountain.
Yeah.
It's just not one of my favorites.
Yeah. I think it's to me, it's a good place to people watch, you know.
Well, the whole park is a great place to people watch.
But then they get in the water and, you know, people start, kids get in the water and adults get in the, you know, right with the, where the fountain is there.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Christy Webb will be here second hour, talk about the permaculture with Anna Maria Leon, who is the permaculture expert, Angela Taylor. We'll be here as well, perhaps more folks, and we're going to have a great time, second hour. So if you've got questions in the second hour about gardening, about your veggies, about doing permaculture in your own yard, 773-763-9278. Meanwhile, if you got questions about the quality of water in the Great Lakes, 773-763-9278, because in just a couple of minutes, let's make sure we've got this right here. We are going to have Lyman Welch from Alliance for the Great Lakes. So stick around for that, and we'll be right back.
Mosquito bites are painful and itchy, and mosquitoes can carry West Nile virus and other diseases. But there's an effective organic way to kill mosquitoes. Mosquito Dunks are America's favorite organic mosquito killer because they kill mosquitoes before they are old enough to bite. The active ingredient in Mosquito Dunks kills mosquito larvae before they become flying, biting, disease-spreading adults. Just float a donut-shaped mosquito dunk in ponds, bird baths, fountains, rain gutters, or any place where water collects to naturally kill mosquito larvae. Mosquito Dunks are deadly to mosquitoes, but harmless to pets, people, fish, and other wildlife. Each mosquito dunk treats up to 100 square feet of water and will kill mosquito larvae for up to 30 days. So don't let disease-carrying mosquitoes ruin your summer. Stock up on mosquito dunks. You can find mosquito dunks and mosquito bits at home centers, garden centers, and hardware stores.
This is Mike Novak with a message from the Illinois Hydrilla Task Force. Dense mats of aquatic plants at your favorite fishing spot or swimming hole can really get in the way of summer fun. You can help protect Illinois' lakes and streams by keeping a lookout for the aquatic superweed hydrilla. It's already been found in neighboring states and impacted boating, fishing, and water sports. To learn more, go to hydrillahunt.org and report any suspicious aquatic plants you find. Your neighbors and fellow water users will thank you.
Hi, this is Ron Calgo from Mighty House. Remember that raffle the Illinois Solar Energy Association did last year where they raffled off a car? You didn't win? That's okay. I didn't either. The ISEA had so much success with the raffle last year that they decided to do it again. But this year, you have a chance to win an all-electric Tesla Model S and a Bosch 240-volt charger for only $100. The Tesla Model S is one sweet ride and was ranked best overall car by Consumer Reports this year. To have a chance to win, go to IllinoisSolar.org and click on the Tesla Model S link in the top left-hand corner. You can buy one ticket for $100 or four tickets for $300. Only 2,000 tickets will be sold. Net proceeds will fully benefit the Illinois Solar Energy Association, a nonprofit working to advance solar energy development throughout Illinois.
Bosch Home EV Charger will be installed for free if the winner is within 50 miles of Chicago. Drawing will take place on October 4th, 2014. There is no limit on the number of tickets that can be purchased. Need not be present to win. If less than 1,500 tickets are sold, then the drawing converts to a 50-50 drawing. Tickets are only valid if sold in the continental U.S. The winner is responsible for all taxes, title, and destination charges. See the rules and regulations page at IllinoisSolar.org for more details.
It's time to step in the green room.
Life's a garden, dig it. You make it work for you.
In the Green Room with Mike is brought to you by Christy Weber Farm and Garden at CWFNG.com. Let them inspire you to create your own oasis.
I love it. I'm on the air, and I look over, and the phone's ringing, and it's Christy. So I talked to her for just a second. I said, hey, I'm on the air. Got to go. So she will be here in the second hour. But let us go to the phone line and bring in Lyman Welch from the Alliance for the Great Lakes. Lyman, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you on this beautiful Sunday? You're back in the Chicago area, I assume.
Yes. I just got back from Toledo and back in Chicago.
And boy, are your arms tired, right? I'm sorry about that. It must have been interesting. I've been, you know, doing the research for this about this segment and looking at some of the photos and the pictures of the algae bloom in Lake Erie. It's fascinating, if not disgusting. And did you get a chance to see it up close and personal?
I did. I was in Toledo for a couple of days and went out on a boat into the middle of Lake Erie and was just astounded to see the kind of blue-green color. It's almost like a green paint in the water. Collected a sample there with the help from some scientists, and you can see this out in the middle of the lake. The bloom is extensive. It spreads all the way from there onto the shoreline at popular recreational beaches in Maumee Bay State Park. You can just go to the shoreline and see the blue-green algae floating in the water. It floats to the top, and it's just a real incredible sight.
And toxic as well, to some degree, isn't it?
Absolutely. This type of blue-green algae produces a toxin called microcystin, and the toxin prevented nearly 500,000 people in the Toledo area from drinking their tap water for a couple of days. It makes it unsafe to drink the water. And it's really incredible to me to be in a town where you can't drink the water from one of our great lakes. And this is a serious situation and just a real alert for everyone in the entire Great Lakes region.
I would think so. Now, Lake Erie, you know, and the idea of folks not being able to drink clean water, it immediately turns us into a third world country, or at least some counties in the United States. But Lake Erie is a particular case among the Great Lakes. It is the shallowest of the Great Lakes. It also has more of the kind of runoff that causes these algae blooms, does it not?
That's right. Lake Erie is the shallowest of the Great Lakes, and it's the furthest south. And it has, as a result of that, warmer waters, as well as quite a bit of sediment and nutrient runoff from farm fields. in the area. And these conditions, especially the nutrients, feed the algae and cultivate it in especially the western part of Lake Erie.
Okay, let's back up, though, and talk about how we got here, because we went through this as a country before. In the 1960s, it became critical. We were, you know, obviously the Cuyahoga River caught fire. We had algae blooms like this. We had them in other lakes. We had them in Lake Michigan. It's because of this, we got on a path where we created the EPA. We had the Clean Water Act passed, the Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement with Canada. And in a matter of 15 years, we really made great strides in cleaning up our Great Lakes. So what happened? Are we backtracking?
Yes, we did. You're absolutely right. In the late 60s and early 70s, the algae situation in Lake Erie and other events caused the start of the Clean Water Act, the Great Lakes Water Quality Agreement. Even the organization I work for began at that time. And that work and efforts to reduce one of the prime nutrients, phosphorus, that runs off into the lakes did help control and reduce the algal blooms into Lake Erie. However, in recent years, we've seen a resurgence of these algal blooms to a huge extent in Lake Erie. Scientists believe that invasive species such as zebra mussels and quagga mussels in the lake have changed the ecology, as well as changes in climate, where we're getting more frequent storms and larger spring rainfall volumes. And that's contributed, along with some runoff from farm fields, that makes the phosphorus is one of the key nutrients there more available and easier for the algae to grow with.
Yeah, Scientific American, I found an article about this, and where they say that this actually fits right in with the effects of climate change, that it's not, to them, it's not a surprise that we might start to have these algae blooms, because that is part of the scenario with climate change. But you mentioned the phosphorus runoff, and a lot of fingers are being pointed at farmers. And yet they are saying, well, wait a second, we're not putting any more nutrients in our soil than we need specifically, precisely, because if we do that, we lose money. And we're employing different kinds of techniques, low-till and no-till. So their backs are against the wall a little bit on this. How much of it is farm runoff, and how much of it is other kind of phosphorus runoff?
There are many different sources for phosphorus runoff and loading into Lake Erie, but the two major sources of phosphorus into Lake Erie are from sewage treatment plants and from runoff from farm fields. Now, the laws that we put into place with the Clean Water Act have done a pretty good job controlling the discharges from sewage treatment plants, but the runoff from farm fields really relies on voluntary measures and practices, and we've not done as good a job controlling that runoff.
Mm-hmm. And what's the likelihood, because the folks listening in the Chicago area want to know, is this going to happen to Lake Michigan? And I happen to know friends who have a lake home up in Door County, and they've been complaining about algal blooms for years there, and they say sometimes it's pretty nasty. I saw an article in the Trib that said, oh, you don't have to worry. Lake Michigan is a different case, and it doesn't get as much of that runoff. But then when you think about Green Bay and what's going on up there, it makes me worry. Do we have to worry about Lake Michigan?
Yes, this is a regional issue. This impacts all of us in the Great Lakes region. We have seen algae problems in Green Bay on Lake Michigan and in Saginaw Bay as well. And this is not just Lake Erie. We are fortunate with Lake Michigan in that it's a much deeper lake, and we haven't seen as much of the blue-green with the toxin microcystin in Lake Michigan. But we have seen growing problems with algae, especially in the Green Bay and along the shores of Lake Michigan in the northern parts. And so really what we have is Lake Erie here and what's happened in Toledo just this week is, you know, the canary in the coal mine letting us know we need to take action and take some bold steps to address this problem as a Great Lakes region.
Yeah, you said it. You took the words out of my mouth. I actually used that phrase yesterday in speaking to a friend. I said, this is a canary in the coal mine. It's a wake up. It's a slap in the face is what it is. And what worries me is that we won't pay attention to it or that we'll get some knuckleheads in Congress that fight practical measures to fix the problem simply because politics has changed in the 40 years since we passed really important legislation to protect our water. It worries me. Do you see politics getting in the way of effective measures?
The Great Lakes and having clean water is an issue that people on both sides of the political divide can come together in support. No matter what your political view in the Great Lakes, we recognize the value of the clean water that provides drinking water and recreation for more than 40 million people in the Great Lakes region. And we've done a lot over the last years to help protect the water in the Great Lakes. And there is no reason that we should have pollution preventing us from drinking the water from our Great Lakes. All of our efforts will go to waste if we can't drink the water. That's a fundamental value that we have in this region.
Well, it is, Lyman, and yet I worry about those things. I mean, I didn't mean to throw you a curveball there, but what happens if you have an action agenda for how you can clean this up, and folks can find that information at MikeNovak.net. This week's show, I've got the whole thing posted there and a link to it. But, it's pretty practical. And what if people say, well, we can't do that. We don't have the money, or, I don't like the guy sitting across the aisle. And a lot of that goes on these days. But let's get to that action agenda. And by the way, we are on the phone with Lyman Welch, who's the director for the Alliance for the Great Lakes Water Quality Program. You guys have some pretty practical stuff, and some of it's international, some of it is federal, and some of it deals with the state of Ohio, because obviously we're talking about Lake Erie here. One of the things that I was stunned by is that there are no limits on the amount of phosphorus that can flow into our Great Lakes right now. That just seems amazing to me. How do we change that?
Well, this is a problem that's within our control and is preventable. We can change this, and the bottom line is we need some quick commitments from the governors of the Great Lakes states and the Premier of Ontario to implement measurable reductions in nutrient pollution, particularly the phosphorus, on a clear timetable so we know how much and when these reductions will take place.
So that's one of them. We need limits on phosphorus. One of the federal recommendations you have is regarding microcystin, but there's no safe drinking water standard for microcystin. So again, it seems like it's a very practical move. You say that the EPA should set up a specific standard.
That's right. Right now we have a World Health Organization standard for that. We would like to see the EPA have a clear standard for everyone to follow, as well as the testing procedures that would go along with that. But, you know, testing for the toxin is you know, checking after the fact. The real source of the problem is the nutrients that are feeding the algae in Lake Erie and the Great Lakes. And so that's why we the primary concern is addressing the source of the problem, which will not be an overnight solution, but we need to start moving now to reducing the phosphorus that's feeding the algae in the Great Lakes.
One of the things that just stunned me when I was looking at your action agenda, listen to this. Currently, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers dumps approximately 4 stadiums full of sediment laden with phosphorus into the shallowest part of the shallowest Great Lake. Yikes! What is that all about?
Well, that's an issue where the Army Corps is doing work dredging part of Lake Erie. As I mentioned, Lake Erie is the shallowest of the Great Lakes, and there are efforts to dredge parts of Lake Erie to improve shipping and, you know, allow that transport. And they're simply just dumping the sediment that they scoop up elsewhere in the lake. And many believe that dumping may be contributing to the algae problem.
Well, and I would assume, so what you're saying is the phosphorus settles into the sediment, and then when they dredge it up, it's released back into the lake. That would make sense not to to have that there. How do we address the fertilizer problem and the phosphorus in the fertilizer? Because as you mentioned, the two main problems are the phosphorus runoff from farms and also our sewage going into our lakes. How do we address that problem, especially in light of what I said earlier, where farmers claim that they're already being as careful as they can possibly be?
Well, there's more that can be done, and for both sources. For sewage treatment plants, we do have limits on the amount of phosphorus that can be discharged from most of the sewage plants. But those limits were set years ago, and with new technologies, they can be reduced. For farm fields, the runoff there are, you know, steps, really common sense things that farmers can do, and many farmers do care about their land and the water and do a lot to help do the right thing. But steps like not applying manure on frozen ground where it would simply run off much more easily into the water, these types of practices can be changed to help reduce the amount of phosphorus that runs off into the water. And the states can set the agenda here and help tell us, you know, how much phosphorus and which different parts need to take action to have it happen under a clear timetable to reduce the phosphorus.
Lyman, I got a phone call that's come in that I would like to take. I'm going to go to line 2 and bring in Dave Zaber. David, welcome to the program. Good morning.
Hi, Mike, and hi, Lyman. A great show today, Mike. I'm so happy you had the guest on. I just wanted to bring up a couple quick issues. I think there's also issues with regards to herbicides. We've got lots of low-level herbicide runoff into these watersheds, into the Great Lakes, and they really hammer green algae. And once you kill off those green algae, you leave a lot of space, a big niche, for blue-green algae to come in. And so you change that fundamental dynamic. And so in addition to phosphorus, we want to focus and look at these low-level multiple herbicides that are being detected almost invariably in the spring and summer in these watersheds. And then the other issue is that these are often localized blooms. So as I go around here in Madison and take pictures of ponds, small ponds, retention basins that are covered with Microcystis or Anabina or a mixture of those, very toxic blue-green algaes, you can go to the, you know, a block down and it's a clear lake, sort of a clear pond. So when we're talking about the Great Lakes or Lake Michigan, we really want to focus on sites within it. Like you mentioned, Green Bay, that's where you do get those intense algal blooms. And that's where people are more likely to be exposed as well.
Lyman, what about the idea of the pesticides in our lakes?
Well, certainly we want to limit pesticides getting into our waters and the Great Lakes as well, and preventing unnecessary runoff that will control the phosphorus that fuels the algae blooms will also help with those issues as well. And the caller, Dave, is right that Green Bay is a large focus for algae on the Lake Michigan side, and we need to do what we can all throughout the Great Lakes. The Lake Erie algae, it's such a significant extent that you can see the algae from space. From satellite photos, you can see the green covering in the entire extent of western Lake Erie. And we're just at the start of the season for growing algae in Lake Erie. It's really surprising to see the extent.
Go ahead, Dave.
Absolutely right. In Lake Erie, because of the fundamental conditions of that lake, you do see those huge blooms. And so I would just offer a couple of other quick items. Construction runoff, that's an easily addressable issue, and the enforcement has really deteriorated throughout the Great Lakes, as well as not only cleaning up existing problems, but preventing future ones, such as the Pinoki Mine proposal in Lake Superior watershed, which would contribute enormous amounts of nutrients as well as toxins to the lake. So cleaning up what's the problems that we identify right now, as well as preventing the future problems that we know will occur with certain developments, might be a part of that strategy.
All right, Dave, thank you for your contribution. Wonderful as always, and have a great Sunday. Lyman, how fast you just put out your action agenda, and by the way, you did it with groups, of course, the Alliance for the Great Lakes, American Rivers, Environment Ohio, Freshwater Future, Lake Erie Charter Boat Association, Lake Erie Waterkeeper, Ohio Environmental Council, the National Wildlife Federation, and Sierra Club. You all came together to put this together. Obviously, you want to act as quickly as possible. Have you gotten any response yet?
Yes, we've gotten a great deal of response. This issue has raised attention not only locally in Toledo, but on a national level as well. Decision makers around the country, and especially in the Great Lakes, are talking about what can be done. Our recommendations and calling for measurable reductions with a clear timetable for reducing the phosphorus are being discussed at high levels. And we need really the public support and people continuing the momentum with the Alliance and the other groups that have come together so that we can have a coordinated response at all levels of government, not just in Toledo, but at the states, by the Great Lakes states, and by the federal government to address this serious problem.
Well, I think it would be a mistake. It would be a terrible mistake for people to assume that this is simply a Lake Erie problem. As we mentioned, the Green Bay is affected. As Dave mentioned, there's the threat to Lake Superior and the Lake Superior watershed if this mine is built in northern Wisconsin. Lake Huron, you mentioned Saginaw Bay. Ontario and Erie, of course, always under threat. And so what can people do immediately to have an effect on this and to make sure that these items move forward?
People can speak to their decision makers. We are calling on the governors of the Great Lakes states to take action using our action agenda. More locally, there are public hearings that are taking place in Toledo this coming Friday. We really need the decision makers to pay attention and to take action to address this problem. When people call and let the legislators know that the Great Lakes
are important to them, and that they want clean water. They want to be able to drink the water in the Great Lakes, to be able to swim without worrying about being exposed to dangerous toxins. That type of public support will help us move the agenda forward and get real action on this.
And I would encourage people to go to my website, mikenovak.net, go to this week's show. I have a ton of links there, including to the action agenda from this consortium of organizations. And I've got some background. I even have the photos from space of algae blooms in Lake Erie, which are stunning. If that doesn't wake you up, I don't know what will. And if we run out of fresh water in the Great Lakes, there, what hope is there for the planet if we can't take care of this? Lyman, thank you so much, Lyman Welch from Alliance for the Great Wakes. I do hope you will keep me posted on this, and I'd love to have you back as we proceed and fix the problem.
Well, thank you very much for your interest, and we also will keep everyone posted on our website, www.greatlakes.org, /Toledo Toxic Algae. We have resources and information posted there, and we'll definitely keep you and everyone posted as the developments occur on this very critical issue for the Great Lakes.
Yeah, I'm glad you gave out that website. Again, they can find it on mine, but give me the URL one more time for folks who are listening.
Sure. Our link is at www.greatlakes.org/Toledo Toxic Algae.
All right. Lyman, take care. Have a great Sunday. We'll talk soon.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
In the Green Room.
You dig.
In the Green Room with Mike has been brought to you by Christy Weber Landscapes at ChristyWeber.com. Right in your own backyard.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I have exciting news to share. Natural Awakening, Chicagoland's only monthly magazine dedicated to healthy and green living, is now available throughout Cook and Lake Counties. Natural Awakenings features articles about fitness, local food and drink, healthy kids and families, even healthy pets. We also cover gardening and environment, sustainable building, energy conservation, and green living. We include local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that in each month's issue, you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a new business in your neighborhood, or something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Yeah, and me too. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Before we get to Rick DeMaio, John wanted to make a comment. John, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Well, good morning. Thanks for having me on there, Mike.
Sure.
Listen, I'm a lifelong artist myself, so I'm kind of one of the Chicago residents with my eye on these things. And I got to tell you, regarding that fountain downtown at Millennium Park,
yeah,
You know, the thing I don't like about it and have never been able to get comfortable with is two things. One, if you take a human face and remove the outline of the face where the cheeks and the chin are and you just show the features.
Yeah.
With all due respect to all of humanity, most people don't look that good. they just kind of lose something critical in the overall ability to compute the face from the perspective of another person's pair of eyes. So you get all these box-shaped faces with no chins and cheeks, and frankly, I think they're ugly. I just think they're unappealing to see.
Maybe that's what's bothering me. I don't know.
No, I mean, honestly, I think bothering is exactly the word. Something is slightly amiss compositionally when you take that outline away from a human face. I think it is a bothery thing. The other issue I have a real problem with is that the faces are spitting. I mean, when it comes down to it, the fountain face synthesis involves, you know, making them appear to be basically expectorating on you.
You know, actually, that's kind of...
I find that gross. I find that a gross concept.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, you have to realize that there's going to be an immediate and visceral response, and maybe that's it.
That is exactly my point. I think on a visceral level, there are two very distinct kind of problems with the whole concept of the fountain. It's I felt that way from day one.
Okay, John. I'm glad I'm not alone here.
Not even close.
And I didn't know why I wasn't crazy about that installation, but yeah, I think you've helped me nail it down.
Right on. I'm really happy to contribute. Thanks a lot.
Have a great Sunday. Let's go to Rick DeMaio. Now, what do you think, Rick, of the big fountain at Millennium Park?
I'm in favor of it as long as every once in a while they rotate, you know, pictures of Rick DeMaio and Mike Novak.
No, you don't want that because then we would look really weird and without our structure and box shaped faces and we'd be spitting on people.
You know, instead of like when you spit like an adult, like you do it as a kid, you know, you kind of squeeze one side of the air to the left side of your face and you make it go to the left and you kind of wink at a person or something like that. What do you think about that?
I'm going to pass. Okay. But if you want your face up there, go for it.
Yeah. But other than that, you know, when it's nice and hot and humid, that water coming out of there feels pretty good, right?
Well, that's fine. That part of it is fine. But you can go to Buckingham Fountain and just stand in the mist there, too, you know.
Yeah, I guess when the wind blows from a certain direction. But the amazing thing, Mike, is, you know, I mean, I'm always trying to relate stuff to weather. We haven't had any really stretch of hot, humid weather in a while, so it's probably made those type of, you know, installations that, Grand Park and Millennium Park probably not as visited as, you know, in recent summers. You know, when we have had several days of 90 degrees. I mean, I talked about this last week where the pattern was going to remain slightly at or below normal, and that's pretty much what has happened with rain continuing across central Illinois and into Indiana and Ohio, and here we are stuck in northeast winds and, you know, temperatures generally 4 to 5 degrees below normal, and the pattern just doesn't want to change, and that looks like it's going to continue to happen.
Some of us like it, though. I mean, I'm not having an issue with this at all.
Yeah, I know. But by the way, Mike, I have to say that I am currently sitting outside the schoolhouse, not the schoolhouse, but the library in downtown Milford, Pennsylvania, visiting my parents on my trek through the Northeast. And this schoolhouse, I keep saying schoolhouse, which was a schoolhouse at one point, this library was built in 1820 and housed the family of none other than Gifford Pinchot. I wonder if any of your listeners know who Gifford Pinchot was, or maybe you as well.
I do know who Gifford Pinchot was.
Yeah, can you let the listeners know who that person?
Well,
was?
Now you're gonna put me on the spot.
Well, you said yes.
So. Well, I mean, I do recognize the name, and I know that he was a forester, and he was the first chief of the United States Forest Service.
Yep, absolutely. And him and John Muir often kind of locked horns on the difference between what a conservationist is and what a preservationist is. I guess one wanted to conserve the environment and one wanted to preserve it. Those two terms, I guess you can say they're interchangeable, but I think the way Pinchot saw it was, is how do you conserve it but keep it going Whereas I think Muir said, no, just keep it the way it is and the forest will take care of itself. And I think in the long run, Pinchot probably had a little bit more forward thinking, ended up being right. I think you would probably agree with that.
Well, you know, that's the whole thing about the Forest Service. It is, a lot of people think that the Forest Service is there simply to preserve the forest, but no, it's there to manage as well, which means
exactly.
Certain exploitation of our natural resources. And Pinchot, he called it the art of producing from the forest whatever it can yield for the service of man. And that always makes me nervous, okay? When we start getting into that, for the service of man, it's like the Twilight Zone episode, To Serve Mankind. You remember that one on Twilight Zone?
Yeah. I guess that's how you talked back then. There always seemed to be an element of religion and whatever you did in life.
Yeah, and that's what makes me nervous, that whole everything is in the service of mankind. I don't buy it. I see us as just another organism on the planet, basically. And, we're all here. We're all different life forms, and stand back and give everybody respect is the way I look at it.
That's, I think, a very good way. And, you know, it is interesting because I think, and you've heard me talk about this before, is we've always, you kind of look back, and at a certain point in your life, you go, boy, I wish I lived during this lifetime. What would Mike Novak have been if you lived during the 1830s to 1880s in this country, the Northeast? What kind of a person? Would you be any different, or?
I would have been dead by now, is what. That's the way
would have been able to pull off a couple of rounds in your musket quicker than you.
I am such a product of the 20th century that I can't even imagine.
No, but every once in a while, I could picture you with your long mane of gray hair with that triangle hat on and the big boots and the big coat.
Oh, dear.
We must go forward, right?
No. Speaking of going forward, let's I don't know if you heard earlier, because you're in the Poconos, so we were discussing the problem at Lake Erie with the toxic algae that prevented the Toledoans from drinking water there.
It was absolutely huge because I was actually in Toronto when that story broke, and I happened to be watching the morning news, and when that story was, you know, basically went national, the first thing they thought about was, can it happen to Lake Ontario? Because clearly the water from Lake Erie goes through the Niagara River, through Niagara Falls, and eventually into Lake Ontario. And right away, there was the mayor of Toronto exclaiming that, no, there's nothing wrong with that water here, because obviously the mayor of Toledo, Ohio, was there drinking water, which I don't know if that was really a great idea. I wonder if he really enjoyed drinking that water after that story was, I guess, broke, or at least they talked about the fact that it was clean at that point. But it does raise some issues about, you know, how we manage the water, you know, what we think about it going into a season, what we think about it coming out of a season. And I clearly remember back in the mid-'80s when I was at the University of Wisconsin, a lot of the debris, a lot of the runoff from the nearby farms was leaching into Lake Mendota. And sure enough, by the time we got to about the end of June or the early July, there was an algae bloom that not only stunk up the lake, but made it green and no one wanted to swim in it. And that was a huge, huge story. And it took about 2 years before the community and the university and the farmers kind of agreed on what not to put into their farm field, and to make sure that it doesn't change the ecological balance of the lake.
Yeah, and that was one of the things I was discussing with Lyman Welch from Alliance for the Great Lakes, and it's the phosphorus runoff is the problem. But the thing that I mentioned to him is I saw a story in Scientific American that says this fits in perfectly with climate change predictions, nutrients running off, lots of rain, and that rain running into the lake, more severe rain events means more nutrients, and more and nutrients mean toxicity. So this is all part of that pattern.
Yeah, and I think you raise a good point there. I know you and I had shared an article early the week about whether or not climate change has something to do with not so many more tornadoes, but more intense tornadoes. And when you really think about it, here we just finished up the month of July, which turned out to be the coldest month ever for the state of Illinois. And this comes 2 years after the warmest month of July ever, which was obviously not only record warmth, but also record, well, almost near record drought. And then you have all this rain this past week. So it's really tough, I think, to prepare and to plan for the type of nutrients or the type of fertilizer. And if you look through the Illinois Farm Bureau report every week, it's not so much about the farmers watching the corn and the soybeans grow, but the type of pesticides that they have to apply. And if you go through a season constantly getting heavy rain, heavy rain, heavy rain, heavy rain, the application has to change. How much you're going to purchase has to change. And we all know that when you don't know what's going to happen in the future, you generally overplan. And when you overplan, you sometimes overspend. So from a standpoint of just climate change, from how it affects or how it impacts weather, it also affects the people who have to manage certain crops, and with pesticides and other things that they apply to those crops, it's very difficult to plan for that. And that's one of the downsides as well. That's one of the things you really don't think about too much unless you're actually going through 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6 years of going through an agricultural season and seeing what the climate change and climate variability really ends up doing.
Well, we got about 45 seconds here for you to get us a forecast.
Yeah, and you know what, Mike? The weather continues to look good. Mainly sunny skies, upper 70s lakefront, low 80s inland. Ditto for tomorrow, ditto for Tuesday. There's a little wave that comes through. May produce a little bit of clouds and some wet weather Tuesday night into Wednesday. But other than that, the next 7, 14 days, temperatures near normal. Precipitation at this point basically below normal as well, Mike.
Yeah, I notice it's, you know, as a gardener, you notice when you have rain and then when you stop getting rain.
yeah, all of a sudden, a little bit of warm August sun makes that grass dry up pretty quickly.
Not just the grass, but the veggies. You got to keep the veggies watered, too. Well, Rick DeMaio, have a great time out in Pennsylvania. Say hi to the folks for me, and I'll talk to you next week.
And I'll drop a coin in the Pinchot Fountain for you.
Please do, and manage the forest.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye. Second hour. Christy Weber and crew in the studio. Like I said, I got my finger on the panic button, but I don't think I should have to worry too much about that. We'll be talking about permaculture in, of all places, Millennium Park. Stick around for that.
1 minute of the bad side of midnight. It's me, Captain Gonzo, ready to roll. Hot wax, anything you want to hear all night. It's a balmy 73 degrees in Boss City. 71 the valley, 30 men are cruise. But remember, if you snooze, you lose. I'm going to hang with you on Dragon Eye, Raw Gold. So let me know what you want to hear. Your lines are open now. You say it, you know I'm going to play it. And be ready to win, but I tell you to call in. And whatever you do, remember to praise the faith. Put your brain on suspension, let your toes.
It's the Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
And I've got a studio just chock full of people, including the inimitable Christy Weber from Christy Weber Landscapes, Christy Weber Farm and Garden. And should I just start rattling the things off? And because you know the empire just continues to expand, or at least it seems that way. But also Anna Maria Leon, how would you say it?
Leon.
Okay. Angela Taylor is here. Jessica Zieger.
Hello.
Hi. And all of these good folks are changing history in Millennium Park. You said it yourself in that little piece that you wrote about this, which I have quoted on my website, because it's about, you know, in Millennium Park, you have, we were talking earlier about the fountains and the weird fountain with the face. And I thought the guy who called in was made a really good observation about that, about how, you know, it takes the faces like here, you know, and you don't get the whole image. And to me, it's just a little disturbing, but that's just me. And it looks like people are, you know, are spitting at you. But yeah.
It's true.
But other
kids love it.
Yeah, I don't know. But normally when you're working in Millennium Park, you're putting in what? Salvia, you're putting in what kinds of stuff?
One is dragon wing.
Okay, now why? Wait. That you're off mic, and what are we missing here?
All right,
something's wrong here. Just tap that mic there for. No, that's not even hot. That's not even on. It's not even on.
Share it. All right.
There we go.
All right.
Use that one for now. That three isn't working at all, Denny. I don't know. It just seems that I'm looking at all the buttons here, and we've got it. So. All right.
So anyway, Dragon Wing begonias, that's the hot new plant that everybody plants everywhere. Every container in the city of Chicago has that in it.
Of course. But they're cool. They're nice. You know, they're fun.
Oh, I'm tired of them.
Oh, we got it now?
No, good to go.
All right. There we go. Thanks, Denny. What he came and he just bumped it, you know. You just it's like he hit the TV. Well, you go, all right, that fixes that microphone. Yeah, dragonwing begonia and...
So I don't even know. I mean, that somebody else in my company does that. I don't even know.
You don't even...
Not the big plant person. I'm the laborer. Yes.
And you are. I mean, if you look at the photo, and I put some of those photos up on the website from when I went to visit the other day, you know, you wear the red shirt with everybody else, and there you were digging and pulling weeds and that whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, Angela and Anna Maria and Jessica all know way more about the plants. I just know they tell me what to do and I do it. And so they grow them and
right.
Plant them.
So what are you going to tell her to do now? Okay, just this time around, where did the germ of this idea come from to do permaculture in Millennium Park?
Well, I think, Angela, you and I met. You were growing up in the greenhouse.
Yeah, well, I think it kind of went, Christy, where I was looking for space for the youth during the winter to have some place to grow some stuff. And it just kind of spilled out when you said, why don't we grow and put food in Millennium Park? You could use the greenhouse. And henceforth, Anna Marie came on board and looked at a wonderful, beautiful exhibit down there right about now.
Now, was that at the Westtown Academy?
The students from the Westtown Academy that's on Franklin Boulevard at Sacramento, right across the street from Christie's landscape company.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we have a greenhouse that we don't use, so we've just, this neighbor space took it over, and Anna and Angela took it over to grow with her kids. And I think that's where it all started, was you were growing up there, and I said, hey, let's, you know, I got this crazy idea. And when did you come in, Anna Maria?
Actually, I think that you and I had a conversation back in Thanksgiving, around Thanksgiving of last year.
Oh.
And you were asking about permaculture. And so I think this whole conversation just all came together at the right time. Because we were talking about what is permaculture and, yeah. So,
Anna, what is permaculture?
So permaculture means permanent agriculture or permanent culture. It actually was started by Bill Mollison and David Holmgren in the 1970s in Australia. But the word permaculture was known actually by somebody here in Illinois before it was coined by the Australians, just to get that record straight. I don't know the name, but I read it in a book somewhere, but I don't know the name. So what it is that they've taken the best, the agricultural practices from all over the world, and whatever works is it's a system of design of garden. So it could encompass agroecology, agroforestry, earthworks. It's a systems way of designing. And it doesn't only encompass gardens. It also encompasses education, spiritual traditions, companies, the way companies design the way they interface with their internal people.
All right. It's a systems way of designing for the average gardener who's listening. And by the way, anybody got any questions about permaculture or, you know, stuff going on in your garden this year, 773-763-9278. I mean, we've got four people in the studio, four and a half if you count me, who actually know some stuff. And we'll just answer questions, but we'd be happy to talk to you about what's going on in Millennium Park. But getting back to permaculture, so somebody's got a garden in the city or in the suburbs here. Let's take it from the opposite point of view. What are they doing in their garden that is not along the principles of permaculture?
Well, the focus on permaculture is to have perennial plantings, perennial polyculture, and multiple uses. So a lot of times in our gardens, it's a lot of annuals, especially in like our community gardens. It's very focused on production. So production is a lot of annual-based plants, lots of lettuce, lots of kale, lots of collards, lots of corn. And in permaculture, you would add fruit trees, and under the fruit trees, you'd have permanent herbs, like what we have in Millennium Park, like Agastache funiculum, Anise hyssop, or calendula, or garlic chives. So those are things that would come back every year.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, it makes your gardening experience less work, and you have less input to put in. You also don't haul out all of your organic matter. When we prune, it's called chop and drop. So exactly where you chop back your leaves, you leave it there. Your branches, it stays there.
Yeah, but in all fairness, at Millennium Park, we do have to chop and take.
You know, and that's the point I was going to make.
So there are some things and principles in the air. You know, I mean. So, you know, for example...
Because you have rules at Millennium Park, right. So it's not going to be the same kind of...
Well, we already bent them. We bent the rules just by doing this. We planted some of the stuff down there that came from Angela and her kids in Dixie cups.
Yes.
It was seeded in a Dixie cup. So when we show up, generally in the past, we'd show up with these gigantic racks of professionally grown annuals that, you know, all come in perfect little 4-inch pots, all the same size, everything fertilized and massive and ready to go. And then we came down there with all of Angela's little Dixie cups and little pods that had grown and threw them in the ground, and people were not happy, but people didn't, unethical, not unethical. It was very ethical in my, but untraditional way of doing it. You know, we didn't do this mass planting like we always do for everything. This was a very, Anna Maria ran the show. So in my opinion, it went slower. It had to be done her way.
Well, that's a really important point. With landscapers, time is of the essence, and you want somebody who can grab a flat of plants and have it in the ground in 10 minutes, you know, that kind of thing, and then move on to the next one, and bam, 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 bam. So this, I assume, there was a little more TLC applied to the plantings.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Because all of the plants that me and the students grew, it took us a great wealth of time and energy and effort, and there was a lot of sharing of knowledge with the students, which gave them a great focus and helped them to grow. So I kind of felt like I was not just growing flowers and vegetables, but I was growing young people into this culture of growing as well. And it was a magnificent experience because they were able to go down to Millennium Park and look at the space where the things that they were growing was going to be placed. And they got excited and they were like, we have to go back and grow more. This is a lot of space down here. We have to have
We had
so
to grow
much.
A lot more because all the boxwoods, not all of them, but most of about quarter of the boxwoods around in the main beds died. So I went down with some friends of Angela, very unconventional again, and in a loader. I took three West Side folks, and we just ripped out all the boxwoods in 2 days. So we ripped out 2,200 boxwoods that were, you know, just shot from the winter, and that.
We've talked about that on the show. It's just the boxwoods.
Well, I was good. Good, they're gone.
They're gone.
Next.
But these were the ones, these were in Millennium Park, and they were in the traditional beds there that they have. And you've got two main areas where you do this.
Yep, north and south. Michigan, Madison Avenue, it just follows straight up Madison.
Right.
Straight east.
I got a photo, I think we did a photo of that on the website.
Yep, and then another one on Washington, so...
I think that
was cool for the kids, though, to know that their stuff they were growing wasn't just going, you know, to Miss Jones, you know, neighbor space garden, but it was going, you know, down to Millennium Park.
Someplace to be seen by lots of people, and I think for them that was the big energy and the charge because I had rotations of kids over the 12 weeks that I worked growing the plants and everything, and when the first 5 weeks rolled out, they went back to school and said, you really want to go to this program because this is what's going on in this program. So the kids that pretty much came in to work on the plants knew what to expect and were excited about doing it.
You know, they wanted to keep coming back.
They wanted to keep coming back, which was exciting,
to get them to keep coming back.
It was a crappy winter, so it was really nice to be up in that. I mean, just a bad winter. It was just nice to see green and see. We were so... It was something, wasn't it? I mean, we went down to Millennium Park to do some sort of interview with Channel 7, and we all hugged. We had a group hug. And cried because this was such a labor of love and just tears, and we took a lot of crap for doing this. And
all right, from whom? Well, it seems to me
from
what
the powers that be from the city and from just it was just you know it was I did not want to tell anyone what I was doing, so I waited till the
because
last
because you were you. Thought they'd say,
no,
you can't do that. Well, first of all, the committee of no would just say, no, don't do it.
No.
And that was basically it.
Because we've always submitted drawings by February that showed exactly what annuals we're going to plant. And we, get that approval. We have to go through this approval process. And I just, these guys started growing. There was nothing anybody could do. I mean, I was willing to put the money out and buy the annuals if it didn't work. Uh-huh. I knew
Thank
that.
God it worked.
Thank God it worked.
And it worked really great.
Well, all right.
Gorgeous. It's unbelievable.
So now this is the prelude, but folks listening who haven't been down there, haven't seen it, don't even know what you're talking about when you say it worked, and Dixie cups, and students, and tender...
The calendula. It had to be this big.
All right.
It was like an inch big.
So the calendulas were planted from seed in Dixie cups that the kids did, basically.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And you should see those calendulas now.
They're unbelievable.
They are rocking.
Yeah.
They are really cool. But that's not even the most interesting part of what's going on there. I mean, you know, folks are there's corn growing there.
That seemed to catch everybody's attention.
Yeah.
No, folks are shopping. I witnessed it. She drove by and with her baby in a cart, and she looked like, is this actually sage? And she went and she rubbed it and she smelled it, and it was sage. So she reached down and got her little handful and shook the dirt off and put it under the bottom of the stroller.
That's the biggest problem.
Through.
Yeah. Angie was like, what does she think? This is jewels? You know, That's the biggest problem we're having is people are pulling things out. We'd like to just lay scissors around so that they... I don't really care if they eat it, you know?
Well, I'm encouraged if they eat it because then it's actually having its full cycle of life, you know, going from seed to the mouth, and that's what growing food is about, you know? So
love the idea, from seed to mouth.
Yeah, you know, that's really what it's about, so...
So let's talk about the plant palette that you have there in Millennium Park. I mean, we've mentioned sage, we've got tomatoes, we've got corn, there's chard, there's asparagus. Mm-hmm. What's nice about asparagus is when the asparagus is done, the foliage is wonderful. It's very lacy, and it's a lovely backdrop for other things.
And one of your favorites, too, right now.
Pitch the book. Yes. Oh, there we is. Oh, you mean...
Attack of the Killer Asparagus.
Okay, there we go. And any and everybody's welcome to get a copy of it.
We're so happy for you. Congratulations. They have a book. And
it's and we got to do a signing at your place.
Yeah,
at the
Farm and Garden. Absolutely.
Absolutely. So what's on the plant palette there at the Millennium Park?
Let me just say one thing about the boxwoods. It was the universe scent. The fact that we didn't have the boxwoods anymore, because that was going to go inside the yews, this whole exhibit. So we would have never, ever seen what was being planted. So the fact that the boxwoods came out and we were able to plant all the plants outside of the yews, it became very interactive and very educational for people. And when we first put in the plants, people were naysayers. They were like, what is that? You know, they look like weeds. How is that going to grow? How is that going to fill in? And so this was actually permaculture inspired, but its focus was on edible landscaping, because we are putting together an edible landscaping division over at Christy Weber Landscapes. So the palette, when we first talked about what we were going to plant, we had to think about succession planting. You know, what was going to come up in spring, what was going to come up in summer, how are we going to move it into fall? And then we talked about texture and color. Christy picked out the palette for the Cleome. The Cleome, which is the fourth sister of the Three Sisters Guild. And
she's
I originally wanted
to.
She's
going to put that in.
Angela and I were like, what the heck? Okay.
All right. Yeah. You can't just say that and move on.
It's a teaser. All right. So the way the Native Americans planted was they had the corn. And that's why we have two types of corn, Oaxacan green dent and Japonica striped maize. And then they would plant the runner bean that would go up the corn. But we nixed the runner bean because Christy said that's just going to look like a weed. So no runner bean. And then they would also plant a squash.
There's a few in there, though. I've seen them.
The runner beans?
Volunteers.
Yeah.
We did not plant them. They came up on their own. And then they would plant the squash that would give shelter to the raices. How do you say raices?
Roots.
Thank you. To the roots of the corn. And then they would plant the cleome, which would be a pest deterrent for the squash borer. So the we couldn't
because the squash borer is attracted to the cleome.
Yeah.
And so it's
then it would stay away from the squash.
It's a sacrifice plant.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it became the fourth sister of the Three Sisters Guild. Uh-huh. And so we couldn't plant the squash because we said it would take over everything. So that's how we went through what we were going to plant. And then we took a look at what could be perennial, because permaculture is about perennial plants. So then we took
And that's part of the problem here, because you got a permaculture exhibit in a place that really does not encourage that kind of thing.
Yes, yeah, so it was a beautiful hybrid that happened here. And Christy told me you cannot have a regular permaculture bed here because it is in a public space. So we worked really hard together along with Randall Taylor, the lead designer on right. the project as well. And he took the ideas that we had and put it onto CAD. And that for me was a huge learning experience. Cause
we had to put it on CAD because all of a sudden I had told one person from the city who called another person. And the next thing you know is that they were demanding elevations and, you know, renderings and, you know, literally 10 days out. So.
And we changed
literally
it.
Literally 10, and then we had to change it all.
Over and over and yeah. over. At
I mean,
least
even
five
though
iterations.
I felt like they didn't even know what they were looking at, but it didn't matter. At least they had it in their hand. I was going to do whatever it took to make it live and to do. I mean, I have Anna Maria and Jessica are down there like 3 days a week just deadheading, making this so that it works.
Yeah.
Because if it didn't work, it was just going. It was going to hurt the whole effort. You know, three of us are sitting here because we love food. We want to see people growing food. We want to see less annuals, more food in our city, and not just in the impoverished areas where there are vacant lots, but everywhere, so that it's an effort across the city, not just on the west side or the south side, but downtown too. You know, my kids don't even know where food comes from. So, you know, and I live in Wicker Park. They think it all comes from Whole Foods. So
they used to think it came from the Jewel until we had Whole Foods.
Yeah,
so.
Right. But you get what I'm saying. So, you know, Anna Maria was, you know, took everything. It had to be pretty. It had to be flowering. It had to, and then to work with Anna, just talk about the three sisters. We're the three sisters.
And Jessica became the four sisters.
Sister.
Not just got a Hispanic, a lesbian, and a black lady. So,
and an Asian.
And then one white lady. Actually, Anna Maria is Asian, but Hispanic too. Or
yes,
right.
Yeah, I was We're trying covered. To figure out what your background is.
Oh, this is going to be a shout out to my grandmother. I'm Filipina. And I'm also from my mother's side and Spanish on my father's side with some Chinese blood. And Igorot, I'm tribal.
Wow, you got a lot going on.
I do.
You're
I have
tribal.
A lot.
Yeah. I'm not
We're
sure
all tribal.
From which tribe. West side.
West side tribe. Right.
West side tribe.
So let's go back to the plants for a second. We also have two types of cherry tomatoes, Sweet 100s and Sun Gold, which were also grown by the students.
They're so big and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
They got to be so proud. Oh, yes. I'm very proud.
And right now, some of those tomatoes are ripening. We picked a couple.
Yes.
And that's a question, too, because you know that folks are going to come and they're going to pick tomatoes, and that's okay with you, I assume.
That's okay.
That's part of the deal, right? I mean, they're taking sage.
Yeah.
You know,
sage, thyme.
Yeah.
Cilantro, Swiss chard. We have a regular.
They're pulling out the third sister too, the cleome. But the wonderful thing about the third sister is she's prickly, so they don't get it all out. But they kill it. You know, I don't know. We need to be down there more just to educate people.
People are ripping out the cleome. Really? Why? Yeah.
They're very pretty.
They're so pretty. Yeah. They want them. You know, they look like a big spider.
I know. They're called spider flower.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even know that.
Yeah. It is called spider flower.
Oh, you said that. I've heard you say that before.
Yeah.
We also have a pear tree that has six types of pears that have been grafted onto it, and columnar apples. And the reason why we put that in there is we wanted people to see that in a small urban plot, like their backyard, they could still have fruit trees. So a columnar apple only gets 3 feet wide and 8 feet tall at its max. And you can have six varieties of pears on one tree that grows horizontally, you know. So
you can put it right up against your garage in a sunny area.
Mm-hmm.
Done, you know.
Calendula is an edible flower that comes back every year. It's self-seeding. We have nasturtiums and marigolds. Mm-hmm. We have lemongrass. The nasturtiums and marigolds were also planted by the students. They did the Swiss chard.
Did they actually come down and plant the stuff there too? Well, or?
No, they didn't get to come down.
All right, so they put it in the Dixie cups.
Yeah, they took it from the seed.
Carol, have we gotten that photo up there, or are you stuck without a computer? What's the story there?
I took some pictures of the greenhouse.
You may talk to me. It's okay. It's okay to communicate on the radio since it is radio.
We're working on it.
Oh, okay. I'd love to get that photo up there on Facebook of these beautiful women here in the studio. And those beautiful women are Angela Taylor and Jessica Zeger and Anna Maria Leon and Christy Weber. See, I'm teachable. I am teachable. And they're all here to talk about the permaculture planting in Millennium Park and more. 773-763-9278 is our telephone number if you want to get in on the conversation. We will get back to that in just a second. So everybody, sit tight.
Mosquito bites are painful and itchy, and mosquitoes can carry West Nile virus and other diseases. But there's an effective organic way to kill mosquitoes. Mosquito Dunks are America's favorite organic mosquito killer because they kill mosquitoes before they are old enough to bite. The active ingredient in Mosquito Dunks kills mosquito larvae before they become flying, biting, disease-spreading adults. Just float a donut-shaped mosquito dunk in ponds, bird baths, fountains, rain gutters, or any place where water collects to naturally kill mosquito larvae. Mosquito Dunks are deadly to mosquitoes, but harmless to pets, people, fish, and other wildlife. Each mosquito dunk treats up to 100 square feet of water and will kill mosquito larvae for up to 30 days. So don't let disease-carrying mosquitoes ruin your summer. Stock up on mosquito dunks. You can find mosquito dunks and mosquito bits at home centers, garden centers, and hardware stores.
This is Mike Novak with a message from the Illinois Hydrilla Task Force. Dense mats of aquatic plants at your favorite fishing spot or swimming hole can really get in the way of summer fun. You can help protect Illinois' lakes and streams by keeping a lookout for the aquatic superweed hydrilla. It's already been found in neighboring states and impacted boating, fishing, and water sports. To learn more, go to hydrillahunt.org and report any suspicious aquatic plants you find. Your neighbors and fellow water users will thank you.
Hi, this is Ron Calga from Mighty House. Remember that raffle the Illinois Solar Energy Association did last year where they raffled off a car? You didn't win? That's okay. I didn't either. The ISEA had so much success with the raffle last year that they decided to do it again. But this year, you have a chance to win an all-electric Tesla Model S and a Bosch 240-volt charger for only $100. The Tesla Model S is one sweet ride and was ranked best overall car by Consumer Reports this year. To have a chance to win, go to illinoisolar.org and click on the Tesla Model S link in the top left-hand corner. You can buy one ticket for $100 or four tickets for $300. Only 2,000 tickets will be sold. Net proceeds will fully benefit the Illinois Solar Energy Association, a nonprofit working to advance solar energy development throughout Illinois.
Bosch Home EV Charger will be installed for free if the winner is within 50 miles of Chicago. Drawing will take place on October 4th, 2014. There is no limit on the number of tickets that can be purchased. Need not be present to win. If less than 1,500 tickets are sold, then the drawing converts to a 50-50 drawing. Tickets are only valid if sold in the continental U.S. The winner is responsible for all taxes, title, and destination charges. See the rules and regulations page at IllinoisSolar.org for more details.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. 773-763-9278 is our telephone number if you want to call and ask a question about gardening, permaculture, Millennium Park, Christy Weber, her trucks, the trucks that you're doing much better with this year. I follow you on Facebook. What I love about you, Christy, is... It's all out there. You never hold back.
There,
I mean, you had some issues last year with guy who was ripping off the company.
Yeah, big time. Wow. We figure over $100,000 and still counting. So, yep.
Yeah, I saw that. And the auto guy who says, "You don't love us anymore. You're not buying stuff like you did, like you used to." Well,
it was a tire guy. He called me up and he said, "Hey, what's going on? Are you? Did you find another vendor? Don't you love us anymore?" And I said, "No, this is exactly how many tires I should have been buying. Not $169,000 worth of tires."
Jeez.
It's sad I even have to buy any tires this year.
It's unbelievable. And
it's always something, Mike. It's always something. You have to be one step ahead all the time. I mean... If it's not gas, it's tires, it's, you know, whatever. Side jobs, people doing side jobs.
And here you are working in the city, and you always say you're proud of that, and you should be. You've stuck to your guns, and you end up doing things like Millennium Park, but also being part of the 606 or Bloomingdale Trail, whichever they're calling it these days.
Well, it just went out to bid, so we just submitted our numbers.
Oh.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Because it's in my neighborhood, and every time you turn around, there's another street blocked while they're doing construction on that. In fact, I haven't had. I want to get some folks on the show to talk about that because it's really, really cool, and you know, it's an excuse for me to get up there and see what they're doing. That's what I. That, you know,
yeah, you should get Beth White on because she's the one that's really in front of that. So.
All right.
Yeah. So
I will work on that.
Yeah.
That's Christy Weber of Christy Weber Landscapes and Farm and Garden. And off air, you said a couple of things that, again, you know, you shoot from the hip. And I appreciate that because it's always good radio. But one of the things you said about this permaculture exhibit you did, it's most landscape companies wouldn't touch it. And that they're doing a lot of the same old, same old. And I know that, too, because I started the Midwest Ecological Landscape Alliance partly because I was, and other people I knew, were sick of the same old, same old. Same old plant palette, same old techniques, same old chemicals, same old, you know.
Same old.
And some of my friends in the business give me heat for, you know, saying that, but it's true. There's a lot of stuff that hasn't changed, and the green industry could be a lot greener than it is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was one guy that was the executive director, and he used to say, "Well, we're green. We plant trees." We're about the less green out there, the equipment we use. You know, thank God I have a green building, you know, so that at least that's the one part of my life that isn't, you know, producing, emitting, what is it?
Greenhouse gases.
Yes. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, but otherwise I just, you know, I'm trying to do different things. I'm trying to it up and try to get the industry to think differently, but they are so just, it's quite a group.
Well, and you talk about planting trees. and they, you know, pat themselves on the back for planting trees. And what are they planting? Calorie pear, okay, which has already been shown to be invasive. And you know,
yes.
Yeah, the results are in, folks, okay? Yeah. Your Bradford pear is an invasive plant, and yet people love it because those little white flowers, the problem is then they start popping up all over the place, you know? And, I mean, I went to a conference about this last year at the Chicago Botanic Garden, and basically, you know, look at this, and, you know, things like the plant palette, the burning bushes and the butterfly bush. Sorry, I know.
Grasses. There's a lot of grasses. I don't know why we're not in front of it, you know? That's the sad thing about our industry is that we just kind of wait for people to tell us what to do. We don't set the standards. We don't really, you know, some do. I don't want to say everybody. I don't want to, it's not everybody, but I just wish that we would be a little more innovative and think outside of the box and, you know, like work with folks like I'm sitting in the room and do, you know, to take this risk and do Millennium Park is huge. I just can't even to rip out
well,
all
I,
those
I don't
boxes.
Yeah, I don't think that people understand. Well, first of all, Anna Maria, you mentioned earlier that there was some sort of fate involved because coming out of the harshest winter in decades, half of those boxwoods were dead anyway, and it was just as if the fate said, okay.
We counted them, 475 at $100, right, to replace at that size. 475. So, you know, I charged the taxpayers $3,000 with my friends, because I just took my friends out there, Angela's friends, and we ripped out all those boxwoods for $3,000. I actually paid for a lot of this stuff to go into this garden because I really wanted to push it. And it was fate. I mean, it was total fate.
If you had had those boxwoods there, half of the stuff you planted wouldn't have been seen. It would have been a lot harder to get in there. You wouldn't have had room
We would have ripped some stuff.
I know you would have.
There's a lot of people that are so grateful, but there was, you know, I'm a donor. There was a lady that came through several times. I'm a donor. You're taking out my boxwoods. And I'm just thinking, this is a public park, lady. And you know what? I know you're a donor. So am I. I lost $450,000 on building this park. You don't see my name up on the wall. You know, I mean, honestly, I took a beating building that park. So, beating. And I'll say it again, beating. And so I should have my name up on the park. But I love that park. I want that park to be a showcase. And I think we did. I mean,
well, if it hasn't been, it truly, truly is now, because there's truly something to see, because it's truly alive. It's
alive.
Got edibles in it.
That's a great way to say it, Angela.
Yeah, you know, really a boxwood and a yew, they're not alive. There's nothing going on there. I mean, they are technically, but spiritually, no. Zero.
We
okay?
look at the yew hedge now, like Pete Udoff did that shoulder hedge.
Yeah.
To the Leary Garden, so we can't wait for Pete to come out. Roy Diblick loves it. Everybody loves it.
Your permaculture display, yeah.
Pete saw it too, and he really liked it too.
Pete Udolph designed the Leary Garden,
right.
And just to remind people, and today, this year was the 10th anniversary of the Leary Garden being planted. And Roy, of course, up at Northwind Perennial Farm is the nicest man on the planet.
He's the same thing. He's doing perennials with the same thought process that the permaculturists are doing with food and flowers. You know, I mean, this is so, for me, what this means is we're trying to teach people that they mix and that they're beautiful and that you can do that. And then teach people that you can eat from your garden. It's not dirty. Just brush it off and eat. You know, pick.
Well, yeah,
pick.
Yeah.
You pick. I'd love to see you pick gardens around the city. Wouldn't that be fun, Angela?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We'd have a few you pick. People come out to the west side like they're going on some adventure.
Right.
Instead of going to Michigan,
right.
Let's just have a you pick farm out on the west side.
Recycle bags.
And then another one on the south side. And we can put them all in the van, you know? And we'll have a guy with a shotgun or something because they will never feel protected. You know, nobody wants to go south of like Roosevelt or west of Western. And it's great neighborhoods.
It's great neighborhoods.
They're hidden. They're very well hidden. And nicely so.
We kind of like it.
I live west of Western. There you go. Which means that I'm not going to get a cab. Okay.
That's the truth. You might because you're white.
And that's the truth, too. But even if you're white, you don't get them if they're not there. You know, that's part of what happens.
Yeah.
Wow. So,
sorry.
That's great. That's great. Great stuff. I mean, as I say, Christy Weber is always good radio. And Anna Maria, during the break, we were talking a little bit more about permaculture. I wanted to mention that Kathleen wrote in, and she thought that Vicky Nowicki might have had something to do with the coining. I don't think so. I think it was coined someplace else. But this is a shout out to people like her, Vicky and Ron Nowicki, out in. All right, now I'm going to blank on where they live. Downers Grove. Downers Grove.
Yep.
And they've been doing permaculture for 35 years before anybody knew what it was.
Well, there are other people. They can claim this. Nancy Clem can claim this.
Yeah,
I don't
sure.
care.
Nancy
Everybody
Clem
has
doing...
been a part of this. We're all part of it. We're all together in this.
Yes.
We all work together. We all know each other.
Yeah.
I mean, who else is permaculturist?
You know, Daniela Pereira from Openlands, from their head forester.
They park out by my site.
And
they're great. I love them. So we're kind of all hanging around in the same neighborhoods.
Jamie Zaplatosh is also.
We were with her.
And talked to her many times.
Matthew Stevens, he's building a food forest, actually, out at Hales Franciscan High School. Do you know that? So the difference between, like, a food forest, he set me very straight on this, is that a forest, I think, according to permaculture or maybe the definition of a forest, you have to have at least 200 trees. And then the canopy has to be like 70% canopy. I may be wrong on that. But so he says what I do in people's backyards or what we're doing in Millennium Park is an example of forest gardening where you have 7 layers, whereas a food forest is an actual forest mostly based on fruit trees.
Mm-hmm.
You talk to any good designer, 7 layers. Layering is, you know, I remember just the craziest thing. The commissioner of the Department of Aviation, Rosie Andolino, came and said, I love it out here, but we need layers. So it all came, see? Mm-hmm. Even just like you're a normal person, she didn't really know, but layers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Layers in our garden, in our permaculture, layers in a food forest. I mean, you know, so most of these landscape architects, they should really hang out with us, right? To learn about real layering.
Maybe they should.
Yeah, farmers and just, yeah.
Okay, now slide that microphone over because Jessica is here, too. I'm putting you on the spot. You're interning out there. This has to be one of the greatest intern jobs ever.
It's been fantastic. It's been so exciting.
What did they have you doing?
Well, Anna Marie and I are maintaining the gardens. You know, we did help put in some of the plants, and now we're maintaining, pruning, weeding, harvesting weekly now, which has been so fun. And we're donating a lot of the food. So
yeah, where's the food going?
We've been donating to Inspiration Kitchens, but also people who are in the park. You know, they ask for food, and we give it to them.
That makes perfect sense. It's somebody who's in need, and they happen to be in Millennium Park. Yeah, give them a tomato, you know, or whatever else they might need.
They have regulars. They have regular people
have
that
regulars.
Show up.
Customers,
they know their
yes.
time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's like Jessica and Anna Maria they have like a, you know, a store hours. And so these people show up when they're there. And we put them on Fridays now, so that's probably even better.
I lost my train of thought here. This is one of those.
She's at school. That's what I think. Maybe you wanted to ask her is where she's going to school.
That'll work.
Oh. Yeah, that's fine. I'm with the Windy City Harvest Program this year, so that's an urban agriculture training program
through Chicago Botanic Gardens.
Chicago Botanic Gardens in partnership with the city colleges. So that's a 9-month program. We have 3 months of classroom and hands-on work, and then we have 3 months of internship. And this is the first year that Christy Weber has offered an internship, so it's been amazing.
I remember what I wanted to ask, and that is the reaction of people who come to see this garden. I mean, I was there for a couple of hours the other day, and people stop And they comment, and then when you show them what's going on, they're even more interested.
Yeah.
They get really excited, and they think it's the coolest thing ever.
I think it's a learning process, too, because like we were saying, that kids and people think that produce just produces itself on the shelves in the Whole Foods, the Trader Joe's, and the Jewels. But to actually see how it's actually grown and where it truly does come from, that's amazing. It's an amazing experience to see a person saying, wow, tomatoes actually grow on a vine and not off of a shelf. For me, that's one of the biggest pieces for me that engages me to that education, to see that connection people make to where it really comes from.
And even more, the idea of some of the vegetables that they don't use regularly, like a Swiss chard, the idea that it's so pretty and you can eat that also.
Yeah.
But getting back, Angela, to what you said about where a tomato comes from, at a certain point, you know, I've been doing this for so long, I can't even imagine what that's like. But there are people, folks, and some of them adults, who really don't have a sense of that.
It's colorblind. It's colorblind.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it doesn't matter. It just depends on whether anybody has tasted anything. So, you know, but it's all colorblind, the fact that food comes from the Mother Earth, you know.
Yeah.
People do not. It doesn't matter where you're from. They just don't know it.
What are the difficulties? I know that your plants look really, really healthy out there. In the garden. And
they're organic, too. Just so you know.
It's all organic, so you're not using any chemicals on this.
No. The only residue would be the salt that we put down there, you know, but we pretty much...
From the winter.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's... Now, do you salt that area, or the city does?
Yeah, we'll try to salt it even deeper next time so that we can get rid of those ewes.
I'll tell him, open it up. Now I won't be able to. I won't be the snow contractor down there. I would never do that. But it's a good laugh. Right?
I don't know.
We didn't mean to kill the boxwoods, and thank God they died all up and down Lakeshore Drive. Thank God it wasn't just the park.
That's right.
They were everywhere dead. That's all you talked about for weeks on this show.
I know.
So
was the dead boxwoods.
14 years ago, we lost them all, and it was because they were the Koreans. We all put in these little mountain velvets or in all that little fancy variety with the small leaves, and they still died. So, you know, anyway, back to the ewes, right?
Well, and ewes are supposed to be indestructible, and some of them will grow back, but they're also about as boring as you can get.
I don't know. I think they're make a comeback.
Really?
We're going to use them. Yeah, we're taking ours and we're clipping them and making them to look like the Frank Gehry wig. I call it the wig. And and so I got the guys.
You're talking about the band orchestra shell.
Yes,
there.
Right.
The wig.
The wig. I call it the wig. And we've got, you know, we're trying to, you know, make it wavy like that.
Give it some life.
Give it some life so it's just not this dead old green hedge.
I think going back to your question about reactions, we had just phenomenal reaction, really. And the gateway plant to finding out what's going on in there is the cherry tomatoes. That's the first thing. It's either the cherry tomatoes or the corn. That's what people recognize first.
Mm-hmm.
And then they come into the park and they're like smelling something. What is that smell? So it's the basil and all of the other things that we planted in there. But once people recognize one plant, it just kind of cascades into, well, what is this and what is this and how do you use that? How do you use the amaranth that's in there and how come you have three varieties, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We have Love Lies Bleeding, Emerald Tassels, Opopeo, Amaranth. And then we get into the conversation about it's in the Chenopodaceae family, which is spinach, and you can eat the leaves. And they're like, what? And look at
this. Of the amaranth.
Of the amaranth.
Yeah, and the grain as well.
Yes, the tassels.
The tassels.
You can eat that. They self-seed. So it just keeps building and building into this one, this conversation that's very educational. And then you can start to have them taste it and touch it and smell it. And it became very interactive. And we had one lady came up to me and she said, you know, every year I've just always passed by this gallery, like just keep walking. But this year I stopped and I looked and I said, there's something going on here. And so she saw it from the very beginning till now. And she was amazed, you know, to see something grow and develop. That's something new. Like what Angela was saying, it's something that's alive. And I feel like this display is something very alive.
I think we could do it down Michigan Avenue. I think we can do it at Soldier Field, at all the big flower displays. We can just add a little food, little something, and maybe give it back to, you know, the food depository. I know Heartland's growing for them out on the west side by the fire station.
Yeah.
I mean, there's plenty of, there's places and people that could use fresh food. And, you know, I just feel like we the city pays a lot of money to maintain all these big floral beds.
Yeah, they're going to get maintained anyway.
They're going to get maintained anyways.
Right.
So as long as they're beautiful for, you know, pictures or a wedding or whatever, well, then let's go for it. I just feel like let's try. So we did Millennium. It's successful. It's still successful. We're talking about it. We're allowed to talk about it now. We're allowed to talk about it.
I think that's the funniest part. It's like it's like the Manhattan Project or something before you did this. Because we'll have to kill you if you mention that we're planting food.
It's how we go.
You're laughing.
And now you get to talk about it because it worked. Oh, my God, it worked.
Yeah.
That's just too funny. That is too funny.
Yeah, now it just seems very natural, but, you know.
Yeah.
Now
well, and now the expectation is it will work again next year, and I'm hoping you're getting a good response, not just from the people in the park, but from the powers that be to do it again.
Well, it's been tough because, you know, we have to let them take ownership of it. So they thought of it. It's
all
theirs.
They're not listening to this show. Okay.
I want them to. I hope they are listening because, you know, I'm very grateful and honored to be working for the city. And I think all of us are really proud that we were able to do this at Millennium Park. And, you know, we don't own that park. That's the People's Park. And I just feel like the city should be proud of what they have down there and should want to do this across the city, you know, not just
let it grow.
Yeah, let it grow and just be proud of it. And I don't care if, you know, the aldermen want to take credit for it or the mayor or, you know, the guy that, you know, is head of the Millennium Park. It got done. We're proud of it and hopefully they are and we'll move forward. So I think Anna Maria has plans for next year already, but we'll have to let the city know.
Well, let's talk about that in a second. Okay, let me do this, and then we'll wrap up with our great panel here, Christy Weber, Anna Maria Leon, Angela Taylor, Jessica Zeger. We will be right back with them. One of the mixed blessings of having a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is the articles about wonderful gardens in our area. You guys need an article about this for, you know, you need to get I'll talk to Carolyn Ulrich, who's the editor of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, because you need their photographer out there right now doing this so that you have this article in their next June issue or May issue. And that would make a wonderful story. As much as I enjoy seeing beautiful gardens, I know that I will have to walk out into my own backyard and view it at some point, which will send me into a funk and make me consider containers filled with plastic flowers or even pictures of plastic flowers. Nevertheless, I urge you to pick up a copy of the July-August issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine to get inspiration from the garden of retired teacher Bob Wendorf in Villa Park, who, according to Carolyn Ulrich, uses gimmicks like color, rhythm, and form to create a garden that I can only dream of. Some gimmicks, huh? That's the problem with former teachers. They're smart. Then there's my column on the inside back page. I was never a teacher, and you'll figure that out if you can decipher my writing. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Pick one up at newsstands all over town or get a subscription. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I've got great news about Natural Awakenings Chicago. We're now available throughout the city and suburbs, from Lake County to the Indiana state line. So if your sustainable business is anywhere in Lake or Cook County, we want you to be part of our magazine. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakenings than any other magazine to help lead happier, healthier, and greener lives. If you own a green business or offer healthy living or wellness products and services, you should be working with our marketing team to get your message out to our targeted audience. Natural Awakenings is distributed in more than 1,000 Chicagoland locations, and our readers are looking for products and services just like yours. Join us, won't you? We're online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Trying to weather the housing market? Consider replacing your windows and siding. Remodeling Magazine says they're some of the nation's most popular projects today.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling and energy needs. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Coming into the home stretch here on the Mike Novak Show, talking permaculture with Angela Taylor and Christy Weber and Anna Maria Leon and Jessica Zieger. And I want to make sure everybody gets a chance to get a shout out. And I was going to mention on Twitter, Sarah Batka, who is a team member here of the Mike Novak Show. She says, tweeted, listening on the way to Soil Sisters Farm Tour. Shout out to your sister guests. So that's cool.
It's a theme.
It's a theme. And she's talking about it's in Wisconsin. The Soil Sisters are doing a farm tour. Today, I guess.
Cool.
Sunday, it's from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. And you can go to soilsisterswi.org, soilsisterswi.org, as in Wisconsin. So, Angela, what is it you're working on?
Well, actually, I'm working right now because I am a community gardener, and I have a garden in Garfield Park community where we have 37 raised beds and a greenhouse, a 24 by 30 greenhouse, some chickens and bees. But I also serve as the Garfield Park Community Garden Coordinator, where I work with the 30 resident-led gardens in the community with the help of Christy Weber to seek out resources and things that the gardens need to ensure that they're maintained. And our big project that we're doing in our second year is that we host a neighborhood market, which is a downscale farmers market where several other community gardens vend their produce to the community. As I often say, we're living in a food desert in Garfield Park, and to bring fresh, local produce out to the community every month on the second Saturday at Lake Nkedzie, and we have a great time. It's a family-friendly event that's on the second Saturday every month, and music, entertainment, and there are other vendors that's opposite the fresh produce that we bring.
Fabulous. Great stuff.
It's great. It's great fun. I'm going to take a pass because I'm mowing the grass and weeding and, you know, I'm trying to make the money to support all these things. That's my goal, is to keep this company strong so that I can go out and be a farmer.
And, of course, I have to let people know that they can go to the Farm and Garden on 2200 West Grand Avenue.
Doing well. We're having a great
year. And it always
year.
Looks beautiful when I Thank go by it. It just looks fabulous.
Hats off to Marina.
And Renee. And Emma and
all the people over there. We have a great staff over at the Farm and Garden. This will be the first year in 5 years that we might make some money.
I got a quick tweet for Anna here before we wrap up. Jared wants to know about service berries and pawpaws. Anything like that in the future? Is that possible?
In Millennium Park or? In Millennium Park, I don't think so.
Well, actually, their place in permaculture, though.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Service berries are awesome. Pawpaws are also great. You should contact Connor Shaw of Possibility Place. They have excellent.
Love them. Great people.
They're excellent purveyors of that.
Yeah.
And Christy Weber's Farm and Garden will be carrying them next year.
Yeah. Oh, you're going to start carrying his plants at our store.
Oh, so. That's so good.
Yeah. And also, Inuegg is going to be International Urban Egg is going to have a soiree at the Farm and Garden on September 4th.
Inuegg is the International Network for Urban Agriculture. It's a way, it's a website that tries to bring agriculture. This is a not-for-profit that a group of us put together because it just felt like everybody was reinventing the wheel to be able to do urban farms. And so we created this website. It's a website. I like to say it's the Angie List for gardening. But
give the website
other
again.
Other people do not like that. W, what is the...
Inuag.org, I-N-U-A-G.org.
I-N-U-A-G.org.
Wow, so. I'm the vice president. I can't remember that. I can't even remember my phone number.
You got 30 seconds.
I want to put in a plug for the Bionutrient Food Association. We're going to be having a conference on soil or a workshop on soil November 1st at Garfield Park Conservatory.
Cool. So.
Did you do any talking at the garden show?
I did. I did a talk yesterday on fruit orchards.
Fabulous.
In permaculture.
Well, Christy, Anna Maria, Angela, Jessica, thank you so much for being here. Now, there's a tradition on the show. At the end, I say, go green, or, and the other people say, go home. That's how that works. So I say, are you guys ready for it? Everybody?
Yeah.
All right. Go green, or?
Go home.
Ouch.